With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I don't know how we got this interview, but we got it. It's going to be fun for the next hour. Mm-hmm. We have carved out the entire hour to talk to these guys and gals from the Horse Soldiers. We got Bob Pennington. Bob, say hi.
Hey, how you doing out there?
All right. Mark Noosh, how are you?
Hey, good morning, everyone.
And Scott Neal.
Yay, America.
All right.
Hey, yeah.
Yay, America. All right. So we are going to talk about bourbon and Afghanistan, right? Is that the idea?
Mm-hmm. Bob? Whiskey and war.
Whiskey and war.
Yeah, whiskey and war.
That's bourbon right. And bombs.
All right, let's get out of the way, or not get out of the way, but let's talk about the bourbon real quick. You are here for a signing. I have a list of places that you're going to be. If you want to meet these guys, again, these are the Horse Soldiers. They made a movie about them called 12 Strong, and we're going to talk about that also. But they are going to be at Evergreen Liquors. Everybody knows about that in Middletown, 3 to 5. And then Total Wine and Spirits Summit Plaza from 5:30 to 7:30. And then Wednesday, 3 to 6 at Class 6. Oh, they're going to be at Fort Knox. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then Thursday, 3 to 5 at Liquor Barn in Springhurst. Does anybody know the website they can get this list if they're not paying attention to where we are?
Give me the dates and I'm going to put it on my Facebook page.
Social media.
Your Facebook media page. For us too.
Yeah. And we can repeat this at the end of the show, yeah, right?
Absolutely. I understand. It's really good bourbon. So it's,
pretty good. Just so you know, the Evergreen Liquor's my neighborhood, so I'll probably be up there with you.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. All right. Bob, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
So we're going to start telling some stories and see how you got here and what why they made a movie about you guys. But it all starts pretty close to 9/11, September 11th, 2001. Where were you at that time? You're obviously serving at that time. And what were your thoughts when that was happening? And then what happened the next couple of days after that, Bob?
Yeah, actually, I was the detachment commander at the time. Mark had just left the team, just like in the movie. So my character, of course, was Michael Shannon in the movie.
Emmy nominated.
Yeah. No, that would be Oscar nominated.
Oscar nominated. Twice.
So, hey, just remember, Thor never got nominated for...
So you were Hemsworth's character?
Who did Thor play?
This guy
right here. Ah, there you go.
It was a lie.
See, it would have been, they would have got Dom DeLuise to play me, I'm sure.
All right, so let's take it up. 9/11, September 11th.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I was detachment commander, and we had an exercise on the 10th, September 10th, and we were taking some rubber boats down the Cumberland River towards Nashville, and we would drop these guys off to do a reconnaissance team. It was actually Scotty Neal's team that was actually in the boats with us. The guys that took them down there was, of course, ODA 595. And so I commanded the guys down there. We made our drop off probably around 0100, you know, in the morning time. Mm-hmm. It was very cold. Mm-hmm. Colder than I expected in 10 September time frame. So after we made our drop off, very successful, we made our way back up the river and encountered a large barge that almost took out the boats. And so we docked on the side of the bank and waited till morning. Very hairy at that point. but, you know, we weren't expecting this, so we didn't take any what we call snivel gear.
Right.
Warm gear.
Yeah.
And it was quite trying. You know, these guys were bundled up with life preservers they could find to cover themselves up. Those rubber boats, the bottom of the boat is actually aluminum.
Oh.
And so you imagine this is a fast current river. Yeah. And so it's generating a lot of coal off of that aluminum.
I bet.
Did you have bourbon on that trip?
And there was no bourbon, none at all. I don't know why we failed to do that one. So
how did you on the bank of this river find out about what was happening in New York?
Well, since that was still in the morning time, we banked there, slept overnight, woke up the next morning, got the boats ready, got back on the river, made our way back up to a designated point, started loading the boats up, and that's when we heard the news that the first plane had hit. Mm. And so, you know, we were all looking at each other thinking, could that have been a Cessna?
Yeah.
You know, and then the team sergeant, he said, there's no way. That's got to be a terrorist attack. And then we all agreed, yeah, there's no way. That was just not from what we heard on the news. And then so we packed up the boats and made a hasty return back to Fort Campbell. And upon getting back, we were still in line to try to go through. We heard the second plane had hit. So we knew then that we were going.
Well, I guess first and foremost, thank you all. Because had you not done what you did, I'm confident it would have been more on U.S. soil terrorist attacks. But second of all, military planners said that it would take 2 years to accomplish what you all did in 3 weeks and on horseback. How confident were you guys? I mean, because, you know, movies are movies. I don't know how accurate it is, but in the movies, and I got to think this is authentic, you all were confident that you were all going to achieve this and then get back. Is that off base? What was that like?
I think, and we'll let Mark and Bob, you know, tell when you get determined. Of course you believe you can. So Green Berets are very unique. We're more of the mountain men of special operations. You have the luxurious Navy SEALs with hair care problems. you have
watch out for those red dots.
SEAL Team 6, which everybody, you know what I mean,
yeah,
thinks they're the ninjas of the world. Well,
yes,
Green Berets tend to be older, come from the country, and when you get this, think about the most impossible mission you could ever be presented, and you're excited. And so you believe that if you just unleash us into the area, we'll make things happen. And at the time, the country, you don't have a plan in a can, right? And it was, let's send these expeditionary entrepreneurs for the country in the most remote location and see what they can get done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy that when you think about it.
Kind of give us a timeline because you're...
Here's another thing. A lot of people ask us, you know, what's the difference? This is how I equate it to. A lot of people say, what's the difference between a SEAL and a Green Beret? And to me, the difference is a SEAL will go in for 3 to 5 hours. That's his mission.
Right.
For the most part. A Green Beret goes in 3 to 5 months or 3 to 5 years. Whoa. He is endurance. His time on the ground is to build rapport and conduct unconventional warfare.
Right.
Wow.
Dave, try to give us a timeline, okay? You're uncomfortable on the banks of the Cumberland River. You're freezing cold. You hear about 9/11. Then you're uncomfortable behind Taliban lines in Afghanistan. What's the timeline from Cumberland to Afghanistan?
September 14th, our Special Forces team was informed that we would be the first to deploy out of the 5th Special Forces Group at that time.
Wow.
There were 45-man teams.
3 days.
Yes, sir. We didn't fully know what the mission was going to be, but our team was picked because of our experience and qualifications. These guys are amazing. As we were touching on, average age, 32.
Wow.
8 years time in service. Five, Bob, and four of the other guys were already Special Forces combat veterans. So you have that language background. The Middle East was our focus area. Our team had spent in 2000 almost 6 months working in Uzbekistan, the country to the north, and that's where, you know, that country was already faced with Al-Qaeda affiliates conducting large-scale coordinated attacks across their country, and we were there when that happened. So that's how we became aware of about Al-Qaeda threat and the rise of extremist Islam across that part of the country, or that region of the world, rather. But so we deploy out within after several false starts and get into the then secret base in Uzbekistan. And by October 17th, we're informed we got the mission. It's developed a little more. That entire mission information would fit on 4 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. So there was still so little known about it. We submitted questions. We're very you know, there just weren't answers coming back as these special forces teams go into their planning cycle. You're asking, yeah, great, smart sergeants. We go through our planning cycle. We're asking these different questions, and there's really no answers. So we're still confident. We had a framework of what we wanted to do as far as what we've been trained in conducting unconventional warfare. We know we're going to work by, with, or through local militia partners. We had started to identify some of the local ethnic leaders that were already in armed rebellion. They're in active armed conflict. They're the outlaws. They're outgunned, outnumbered, and they're somewhere in the mountains. So we need to make contact with them. And
well, there were still only 12 of you.
Yeah.
It's 21st century Tombstone.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But back here, everyone wanted blood. Like we watched what happened. Now, I'm going to ask you a question about the difference between the psyche of the general public and you guys that were obviously experienced. You just said that you had at least 7 or 8 years experience in service before you were sent out there. Look, we all wanted blood. We were pissed. Where were your all's heads when you go into that engagement when they dropped you in? Like, where were you?
Remember how united our country was?
Yeah.
On
yes.
September 12th?
Yeah.
It was that way forward with the Special Forces, the 5th Special Forces Group and the 160th, our Special Operations Aviators, our Air Force Special Operators that were there, and then our CIA and other intelligence services. You were united. It didn't matter. You're Americans. They've attacked the homeland. Didn't matter whether you're a senior CIA officer, young Green Beret sergeant, or an aviator. It's like, here's what we can do. Here's my missions, here's my permissions and authorities. And we would work very closely with the CIA team that we were introduced to. They flew in just a couple nights ahead of us, Team Alpha. Great, great bunch of mostly Special Forces veterans as well that were in their second career in the CIA. But we were co-located and interdependent with them at every turn. And just that, you know, one of their case officers would come with me every day, and several of my Green Berets from the 595 team would go with their case officers.
Now, and I had actually, I was standing with one of the younger sergeants, and we just did a bombing mission. So very destructive. But my point to him was, and this is where my head always is, and that is, show no remorse, show no jubilation, just do the job at hand. Your focus is to take care of the guys that are with you, your men beside you, and then go home and be with the family. That's our mission.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, and so there's two parallels here. Mark and Bob and the 595 team was part of unconventional warfare. Let's find guerrillas. Let's understand the area, the intelligence, the truth about the Taliban, Al-Qaeda influence, all this other stuff. Our team was focused just on kill and capture. So, you know, there are naughty sides, even in special operations, sometimes those things that go. But so I knew for us, you know what I mean? Anytime we were unleashed, it was to kill and then maybe capture one to tell the story. So what you saw, though, was 30-year-olds with the weight of the country on their back, very professional, organizing, planning for an entire country that didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then to, you know, you'll hear more, to be in that remote location. What I admire now as I get older is the amount of uncoordinated coordination that happened amongst 30-year-olds. Right during that time period that allow less than 90 Green Berets and, you know, 20 CIA agents to take over an entire country in less than 90 days.
One of the things I want to rewind and go back to something that Bob said. Mm-hmm. He said that part of the mission, and by the way, before I ask you this question, I want to remind everybody, please come out and meet these heroes. You can do it today, 3 to 5 at Evergreen Liquor on Shelbyville Road in Middletown. Yeah. Then after, no? Prospect?
Oh, there's two.
Oh, Evergreen Liquors and Prospect. Thank you. Evergreen Liquors and Prospect.
Okay.
And then that's 3 to 5. And then again today at the Summit, Total Wine at the Summit from 5:30 to 7:30. Do not miss this opportunity, I'm telling you. But I gotta go back to what Bob said. Mm-hmm. Bob said part of the mission is to build rapport on the ground. It's got to be extremely difficult with our history of Afghanistan. We've gone in, we've pulled out. We've gone in and pulled out. People have got, they hate us. How difficult does that make it? I don't see how you could trust anyone or build rapport with anyone, given our history.
If you understood the history of Afghanistan, they change alliances faster than they do diapers.
Right.
There, right?
Yeah.
So understanding their culture, their history, the Green Beret motto is free the oppressed, the oppresso liber. When you have an overpowering, you know, maniacal, tyrannical force suppressing their will on people, you see the wedge. And we do it in 55 countries at any one time. There's a team of Green Berets creating peace, keeping peace, preparing. So it's in our nature, right? So that is the difference between a Green Beret, a SEAL, and Delta Force. We are the tool in the commander's toolbox, and our tool is finding those that are impressed. Now imagine this is rural Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And you had somebody from Lexington come into little town so-and-so, and they say, you need to think this way, dress this way. If you don't, I'm going to kill you, your family, and everybody. Those are the seeds of rebellion.
Right.
So our own country's history, right, is a king 3,000 miles away implementing his rule on us. Those are what you look for. Right. And it's intuitive to our culture and a Green Berets to snoop it out and use that. So then by, with, and through, you equip them, you arm them, you make them a little bit better. And we allowed Mark and Bob, allowed them to fight for themselves, not to revenge us. That was kind of my job. You know what I mean? I was the sticky part of the steer. They, you know, created the resistance and made the resistance better than the oppressors.
I consider us more of a diplomat than anything on the ground with a gun. But beyond that, it's just like Scotty said, it's bringing all those factions together. One of the greatest things that we did while we were there, we brought four factions together that to fight for a common goal.
Right.
Because all of them, you know, they're basically warlords. They want a piece of the pie. But to be victorious, you got to bring these guys together. And we created an army from about 1,500 to about 4,500.
Wow. We are talking to the horse soldiers. They are in town today. Bob Pennington, Mark Noosh, and Scott Neal. These guys have great stories to tell. They made a movie about it called 12 Strong. They have some bottle signings with the Horse Soldiers Bourbon, which is supposed to be fantastic bourbon. We know a little something about that here. We'll tell you more of the locations a little bit later.
Yes. Evergreen Liquor in Prospect, 3 to 5. Then Total Wine Summit, 5:30 to 7:30. Do not miss the opportunity to meet these heroes right now. Barino's Pizza, baby, it's Louisville style pizza, and the pizza that gives back to Louisville and Southern Indiana. Why would you go anywhere else? Listen, if you don't like pizza, first of all, what's the matter with you? Get help, huh? But if you don't like pizza, they have an extensive menu. I'm talking pasta, salad, sandwiches. You're going to be amazed. Dine in, carry out, delivery. Yeah, it's that good. Barino's Pizza. Going to find out what our money's doing, the news, then more with the Horse Soldiers on News Radio 840 WHAS.
Man, a gangster's doing dirty deeds. Too much corruption and crime in the streets. It's time the long arm of the law put a few more in the ground. Send them all to their maker and he'll settle on down.
All right, it's almost 10:30 in the morning. That means it's time to play Reeling in the Year.
Hey, Courtney.
It's Courtney Donahoe with the Bloomberg Money Minute. She's going to give us... I'm going to go ahead and explain the game she's going to give us songs. We're going to guess the year that it's charted. What decade do we have now?
We are going to the 1970s, boys.
All right, 1970s.
Okay.
We do have some help here. The horse soldiers are with us right now. So if they have a clue, they're going to help us. But go ahead.
Fantastic. Okay, so let's start out with some former Beatles songs. Maybe I'm Amazed from Wings.
McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Cracker Box Palace from George Harrison. When I Need You from Leo Sayer. Oh,
such a really beautiful voice.
She's so awesome. Angel. Yeah, it is an angel.
Lucifer was an angel too. So. Right.
And this once. Little ditty. Here we go. You know this song, Right Time of the Night, from Jennifer Warnes.
Oh, yes.
It's always the right time of the night.
Southern
Right
Nights.
Time of the Dwight.
Right Time of the Dwight.
From Glenn Campbell. And You Don't Have to Be a Star from Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. And you know I loved her on Solid Gold.
What was the Glenn Campbell song?
Southern Nights.
Southern Nights.
I'm going 76.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
I'm lost on this one. I was thinking mid-70s.
Yeah, I'm thinking 75, 76.
Okay.
El Camino. And I'll give you one more. First Cut is the Deepest.
First Cut is the Deepest.
That smacks a little longer or a little later to me.
Yeah. Okay, so then let's settle with 1976.
Mm. Or 77.
77.
First Cut is the deep dish.
Okay, all right.
What are you, at a pizzeria?
All right, we're running out of time.
77.
Final answer, 1977.
Ding, 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 boys. Yes.
Yes.
Dave Jennings, yes. You're the man.
I'm surrounded by special forces. I've never felt so inadequate in my life.
Really?
I hope my wife doesn't walk in.
And there have been a lot of chances of that, Courtney.
last week we were with the Boy Scouts, so it still felt. All right, get the market on.
I wasn't in the Boy Scouts. I was in the Campfire Girls. You know that.
All right, you're a Girl Scout. So right. Let's take a look at the S&P 500. Slightly lower. Investors may be facing a little bit of roadblocks because of all the turmoil in the banks, soaring inflation too, and consumer confidence. We got a good economic report earlier. It unexpectedly improved in March, so it means that some of the banking woes that we're dealing with haven't quite resonated that much on Main Street. The Dow up 70 points, the S&P 500 a falling 0.5%. With the News Radio 840 WHAS Bloomberg Money Report, I'm Courtney Donahoe.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
WHAS.
Fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men.
Do y'all know these songs? Y'all know the song? Huh? No?
Just What They Say.
Of course we do.
Of course you do.
It's the Ballad of the Green Berets, Tony.
Yes, of course it is.
We sang this on infill.
Did you really?
No, not really. Oh. We actually saw the movie. You know, I told people I did a Whiskey and War story one night. This was last week when I was in New York City.
New York City.
And I was telling them, hey, you know, I was being very, very serious. I said, yeah, you know, we saw this movie that motivated us and got us fired up to go in there and do the deed. And you could see all this serious look on all these people's face out there, you know. And, you know, they were thinking the Green Berets with John Wayne. And I said, you know, it wasn't the Green Berets with John Wayne. I know a lot of you probably thought that's what it would be, but it was Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd in Spies Like Us.
Like Us. Yeah.
I knew exactly where you were going with it.
The whole group fell out.
Speaking of movies, quickly, before I watch 12 Strong, I haven't seen it yet. How accurate is it to your story?
It gets the core truth of how that team approached the mission, how we split up into three-man cells. You know, it just scratches the surface as to what really was going on, though, on the ground. You know, so we're riding horseback, and then throughout our time in there, we're joking, is this the road to Dushan Bay?
All right, welcome back. News Radio 840 WHAS, the Tony and Dwight Show with Dave Jennings, brought to you by the Kentucky Office of Highway Safety. Please buckle up and put the phone down. We're talking to the horse soldiers. They made a movie about them called 12 Strong, and they're called horse soldiers for a reason. They're here, actually, for a bourbon signing. We'll talk about the horse soldier bourbon here in a second and the quality of this bourbon. Because we know a little something about that. But why horses? How did you end up on horses? Do any of you have experience with horses? How did that work? Who wants to tackle that?
Mine is real quick, and then Mark will take the rest of it. My experience with horses was quarter horse training. And so I picked that up in front of Kmart, where I dropped a couple of quarters in the machine. Got bucked a few times.
Yeah, so I grew up on a Kansas cattle ranch and rodeoed through high school and for a couple of years at college at Kansas State University.
Wow.
So team roping, calf roping were my main sports at the college level. But it's just by pure fate that I had that background. I mean, these teams in the Special Forces have some of the best training
that we could possibly have out there. Our team felt completely prepared, but then, you know, literally 48 hours before we got on a helicopter is when we got told you got to be prepared to ride horses.
48 hours
prior. So, you know, there's no saddles with us, but we got on the ground, and that CIA team linked up with us and introduced us to General Dostum. The very next morning, he comes riding up on horseback with about 50 militia fighters, and they're armed with, you know, Soviet 20th century weapons, yeah. AKs, RPGs. They're carrying RPGs and rocket grenade launchers and all this. So it was like we'd stepped back in time about 200 years when we got off that helicopter. But they had tactics. You know, they had an advance party, the main body, and flankers, and what we didn't fully know was their history of their horse culture. The Uzbeks, ethnically there in the north, are horse culture, probably going all the way back to Genghis Khan. And so they had tough little mountain ponies, 13 to 15 hands tall. And I know I'm talking about horses
Kentucky,
here in the middle of Kentucky.
You're right.
And I grew up with quarter horses, working ranch horses. These were not the horses of the best health, but they were just tough, sturdy, smaller, shorter. But they ride stallions culturally. So if you get more than two stallions together, they're going to fight. Can you imagine having 30, 300?
It's like Tony and Dwight.
Yeah, it became a safety issue. The guy's getting kicked or bucked off. I wish I had a video camera. We had the morning buck out show because it was pretty frosty. You know, you're in the mountains up around 6,000 foot elevation or above, and those stallions would just start pitching and bucking out through the camp, and Afghans and Americans got thrown off. And then you got back on.
Yeah.
And
the plus was, having Mark there, really all that experience he had, because we had to adapt and we had to adapt from their culture to ours. So we had to adjust stirrups. We had to adjust. There's a lot of things that we went on, adapting these SOPs, standard operating procedures, to ride a horse. And, if a horse, bucked on the side of a cliff, what's the SOP for that?
Right.
So. Yeah, these guys did an amazing job riding day or night in all kinds of weather. I think back on that mission, it was just cold. It was cold.
Yeah.
We'd have beautiful sunny days, but we got rained on. We swam the horses.
Did you keep your own horse? Did you have the same horse?
Horse roulette.
More difficult.
You're trading up. They're loaning you their horse for a particular move. That move may be a couple hours or maybe all day. But the guys did an amazing job learning how to ride day or night in that situation. And, you were swimming the horses across the streams like something I'd seen out of a Western movie growing up.
Right. Oh, yeah. We're making fun of the Green Beret movies with John Wayne, but now you're on a damn horse.
Yeah, we're on
a
horse.
You are John Wayne at that point.
Well, mine was a Great Dane. I mean, these horses these horses were small, and they were like werewolves. I mean, they were so mean. And so you get a guy who's at that time 235 pounds.
He's
got no body fat. It's all muscle. And then you load him up with
gear,
100 pounds of gear, and now he jumps on this horse. Well, you just pissed off the horse.
Yeah. Of course. Scotty, what was your experience with horses at that time?
It was zero. Now, so back to my play. My play was I was the boogeyman. So as they would ride and start conducting battles and shape the battlefield with the Taliban and their tanks and everything, my mission with my team was to go further behind the lines and kill the leadership. And that way, when the next day's battle would happen, their general wouldn't come, and their soldiers thought that they were abandoned. Two strategies. So once again, there are multiple missions and special operations, from unconventional warfare with guerrillas. You can do deep reconnaissance. It's also direct action and hostage rescue.
Okay, you hit on one of them. Is there a mission you can talk about, one particularly hairy mission that you're allowed to share?
We did hit bin Laden's compound, right? But he had already gone. That's where I got my lapis ring at, because he was mining lapis for Al-Qaeda. There's one where we hit a compound and started a fire, but they abandoned their kids in the houses so they could run out and fight. You know what I mean? There's 100 things. And then there's a battle where you go into a compound and it's an old farmer with a shotgun and you know, we would walk up to him in our night vision, just take it from him and sit him down. So each one was different. So as soon as you walked in, one battle, Tony went into one room and fought hand-to-hand four guys and killed them all with his bare hands.
Wow.
Right? And it was one-to-one. It was 22 of their guys, 20 of ours, and it was over in less than 3 minutes. So it goes from intense, this is it, to this is the wrong building.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, Mark mentioned something about it being so cold, and I want to go back to the beginning of the mission, and I don't know how authentic this is. But in the movie, just you guys getting to Afghanistan, just you guys getting to Afghanistan, you have to take this helicopter, or so the movie says.
Yep.
But they got to fly it at like 25,000 feet, something unheard of that hasn't been done yet. Not well insulated. And you guys, you men are freezing up there, even just going into it.
Yeah, we were freezing cold. We all had to make weight. As the pilots, Chief Al Mack, who's a great friend, that piloted that aircraft, an MH-47, from the Special Operations Aviation Unit down there at Fort Campbell. But we all had to make weight, specific weight, and they weighed us in our gear before we got on the helicopter.
Whoa.
Because they were taking that helicopter extended distances over heights. That helicopter had to be aero refueled. It was about 4.5 hour flight. But they told us that the oxygen system in the back was not working.
Oh, my gosh.
And we knew we were going to go over 10,000 feet.
Oh, my gosh.
We've been through that training, so we know what that means. We're gonna pass out.
Yeah.
But it was just extremely cold, and you were just trying to keep warm and try to get some rest because you knew in 4 hours, you know, it's a game on as soon as that helicopter touched down, come what may. If it's a – what is that going to be? And freezing cold, and we all went to sleep. And that helicopter descended back below 10,000 foot elevation where they inserted us in the north central mountains. And we all come to, you know, about 20 minutes out and got up and got ready, did your final checks. And then they put that helicopter down at 2 a.m. in the morning, right where it was supposed to be.
But I got to think the residual effects of passing out, literally passing out from the cold and lack of oxygen.
Yeah, hypoxia. Yeah.
Yep.
I got to think that's taxing and you're exhausted. You didn't take a nap. You're exhausted and you're drained, and now you're behind the enemy lines in Afghanistan.
Yeah, but you're amped up. You know, it's
well, just a time before that, we've already went through the final planning process, right? And then you're packing gear, you're getting all that ready, and then you're waiting for you're up for 20 plus hours, and then now you're taking a helicopter ride on infield and landing in a place you have no idea.
The CIA team met us right there. And as the helicopter lifted off, you know, the isolation sets in. You're looking through our night vision goggles. Our team was in a perimeter and we could see that we were surrounded by militia.
Wow.
You know, so we're ready to fight if we got to. And the guys are designating targets in the wood line that are these militia groups. And then our CIA team walks up to us and gives us a sign, countersign, right place, right time, pick up our gear, and they hike us a ways to a compound, and then we meet the rest of their team and go about our things. But
how many times have you asked yourself how you survived?
Like, countless. Countless.
Like, I don't want to say lucky, right?
Well,
because you prepare to be lucky, right? I mean, it's all that's the mantra. Like, but how many times do you lay in bed and go, "How the hell am I laying here?"
Well, all three of us look at the same thing, you know, at different missions that we had. Especially that one is, you realize that years later, not so much as that time frame. That time frame, you're mission focused. You've got a job to do. You want to be there for your guys right beside you, your brothers, so that it doesn't come to you at that point. It comes to you years later. Then when you sit down and you have a horse soldier bourbon and you're going, man, how did I make it out of that?
Look, I want to hold you guys over if you don't mind, because there's still too much to get
to. But real quick, yes or no, do it all again?
Twice.
Hell yes.
Absolutely.
Faster. But we did it again.
Yeah, faster.
You know what I mean? There's more to this story than just what the movie portrayed. Right. This has been our lives until we retired. And then the next group of young men and women are doing it today.
Yep.
Listen, do not miss your opportunity to meet these heroes and taste the phenomenal bourbon, by the way. From 3 to 5, they're going to be at Evergreen Liquors in Prospect. And then from 5:30 to 7, they're going to be at Total Wine in the Summit. Come out and join us, man. I'm going to be with you guys at the Summit. Stick around. Dave, who do we have? River City Distributing. Folks, listen, life is way too short to be in a job that you hate. Get rid of that job and get a career with Louisville's premier distributor when it comes to beer, spirits, and wine. I'm talking about Keg One River City Distributing. I've known folks that have worked for Keg One River City Distributing for 3 decades, and here's what I do know. Once you get a job there, you never leave. Why? Because Keg One River City, they want to make sure that you're happy and you're excited about your new career. It's not a job, and right now, because they're expanding, you have that opportunity. Get a career with Keg One Distributing, okay? For more information, just go to Kegs One, jobs at kegsone.com. Stick around. We're going to find out what our, we'll go news, then more with the Horse Soldiers on News Radio 840 WHAS.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.